Let's recite the lecture verse. The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Well, thank you all for coming. Thank you for being here. This is the celebration for Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of Wisdom. And I think, I've just given the whole Dharma talk when we say, I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Because that's what Manjushri is all about, looking for the wisdom within ourselves. So it was interesting to me looking up some things about Manjushri and thinking about what I could say that hasn't already been said, that you might not already know. But even if you know it, it's okay. Several weeks ago, and I wanted to thank Rev. Master Mayan for inviting me to give this talk. Several weeks ago, Rev. Master Daishin gave a talk here, and one of the things that he talked about was a teaching by Ajahn Pisano, and it was titled, Don't Be Selfish. And I thought, oh, well, I'm not selfish, but I'll learn something from it. But over the time since he gave that, I thought, oh my goodness, I don't believe this. Look at that. I just did that, and that's selfish. Or I just thought this, and that's selfish. So, Master Daishin, thank you. I learned a lot from that talk. Actually, it struck me so personally that I went to look it up on Abhayagiri's website, and it was a talk, I think also written, but it was a talk that Ajahn Pisano did, and I listened to the whole thing, and I learned some more. And then I was asked to give this talk about Manjushri, and I thought, wisdom and don't be selfish, there must be some connection there. These things don't happen by themselves. There's always something here. And I realized that the vows that we take are many and varied, but one of the things we do is convert greed, hate, is vow to try to convert greed, hate, and delusion into compassion, love, and wisdom. And it took me a while, but I think I finally started to understand compassion, and I finally got out of sexual love into love for all beings. But wisdom continued to elude me. And I thought, I've always searched for wisdom, right? Well, okay, I was, I think, the first in my family to finish high school and go to college and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I have lots of these nice academic credentials and certificates and et cetera. But none of them seemed to me to require wisdom. It just required a lot of effort and looking in books. But the basic core principles of compassion, love, and wisdom stayed with me. And when I was looking up some facts on Manjushri, and he's our Bodhisattva of Wisdom, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. And as usual, I looked to see what Reverend Master Chiyu has to say about it. And in Zen is Eternal Life, she has, and I recommend you reading it, she has an entire chapter, chapter 7, on the heart of Manjushri. And this is what she has to say. This is just a little bit of what she has to say. When I first asked my former master how to go about my studies, he told me, quite simply, expect nothing, seek nothing, just live. Well, this to someone who had traveled around the world. Remember, she was in England, she went to Malaysia, and then she went to Japan. She's talking about Kohei Senji. Yet he spoke nothing more than the literal truth. The analytical and critical mind of Westerners desires something more than the above, and it is this analytical and critical mind that Zen seeks to transcend. In order to do this, one has to come to an understanding of what is real mind and what is misconception. In the last two chapters, I talked about the ways in which Zen teachers train their pupils to go beyond duality, then seemingly back into duality through activity and stillness. Now I want to talk about the way in both stillness and activity, compassion and love dissolve into wisdom, which is the immaculacy of nothingness, leading to being able to just live, expecting nothing, seeking nothing, and knowing nothing. The acme of perfection of spiritual poverty which possesses the universe. Well, I sat for a long time and reflected on the whole thing that she said. And the words that kept coming back to me is stillness and activity, compassion and love dissolve into wisdom. So the words dissolve into wisdom made me think that what I think of as I doesn't really have anything to do with this. It's just living. It's just meditating. It's just following the precepts and allowing our compassion, love to dissolve into wisdom. So that was part of what I first learned from it. And then when I was thinking about the just living, being still, I remembered an article which I had copied out. This was by the Thich Nhat Hanh, obviously before he died. And it was in autumn of 1998. And he says, he's talking about all of our bodhisattvas. Bodhisattva Manjusri knows how to stop. In order to see deeply into the heart of things and into the hearts of those around him, we have to learn to stop our mind in order to look deeply. So basic Buddhist principles, stop thinking, but stop trying not to think. Just stop our mind in order to look deeply. As Avalokiteshvara, we learn to listen without prejudice. In other words, we learn to listen with a totally open mind. As Manjusri, we learn to look without judging. I'm very good at judging. I've done it all my life. I've done it in all the different careers I've had, journalism and nursing and etc. And I thought about that and was reminded when I first came here 30-some years ago, I asked whether I should keep my RN license, and I was told yes because it might come in handy. And as it turned out, Reverend Master G.U. became ill, and so it was very fortunate that I had an RN license. Medicare doesn't like to reimburse you just if you're a lay person, but if you're an RN doing something, they'll reimburse you for that. So here I was. I was barely a novice, and I had 20 years of nursing experience and thought I knew everything, and I knew quite a lot. But as a monk, I knew absolutely nothing. And it was really interesting to be around Reverend Master G.U. and Reverend Master Daiswi, Reverend Master Mayon, Reverend Master Haryu, and other people, and think I knew everything, and then realize that, oh, I don't know anything at all. I just know the technicalities, and that's useful and handy. And it was, and I think that was the beginning of my starting to realize that what's up here isn't the most important thing. That what's the most important thing is what's in here, what's in here. And we have to really, at least I did, as also a great talker, none of you would know that, of course, what you really have to do is be still enough that what's in the head kind of calms down. And what's in the heart says, hello there, this is what we want you to know. So he continues, as Manjushri, we learn to look without judging. As Samatabhadra, we learn to put that listening and looking into our daily activities. So one of the things that I learned from this, that I've been learning for a number of years, is that Buddhist bodhisattvas are not just these glorious creatures with these wonderful costumes, etc., etc. They can be an inspiration for us for something that we need to do in our daily life. And I'll read you a little bit of what he continues here. Bodhisattvas are awakened beings. We also have our own nature of awakening, no less than they, but we have to train ourselves. So that could be a difference, is that bodhisattvas have gotten the question and are realizing the answer, and most of us haven't learned what question we want to ask yet. But the question will come if we're still enough, if we pay attention to what's going on in our inner being. In the beginning, we still feel separate from these bodhisattvas, but practicing steadily, we realize that we are Avalokiteshvara, Manjushri, Sumatra, and the other bodhisattvas, Samatabhadra, and the other bodhisattvas. And it's not important whether they were historic figures. Did they really exist? Did they come out of someone's imagination? It's not important. Born in such a year or in such a place, the key, Thich Nhat Hanh says, and I totally agree, haven't gotten there yet, the key is to realize their qualities within ourselves. So the quality of compassion, the quality of wisdom are the ones that we want to generate. So how do we... doesn't want to stay there, does it? So the qualities that we want to duplicate in ourselves with Manjushri are openness, truly, truly listening. Truly listening to what's going on with us and what's going on with other people. Another teaching that I found quite helpful in understanding bodhisattvas is bodhisattva archetypes. It's by Reverend Tagon Dan Layton. It's written a while ago, a few years ago, and I've always found it really, really helpful. And I thought, oh, I went to him for help on understanding Avalokiteshvara and Samatabhadra. Obviously, he must have something to say about Manjushri, and of course he does. An entire chapter, The Prince of Wisdom. And this is what he has to say about Manjushri. Manjushri is the bodhisattva of wisdom and insight, penetrating into the fundamental emptiness, the universal sameness, and the true nature of all things. Manjushri, whose name means noble, gentle one, sees into the essence of each phenomenal event. This essential nature is that not a thing, not a single thing, has any fixed existence separate in itself, independent from the whole world around it. Basic Buddhist teachings, all things are connected. Nothing has an independent, separate self. The work of wisdom, and I think he puts it all very nicely in this one sentence, the work of wisdom is to see through the illusory self and other dichotomy. I mean, isn't that what we grow up with? This is me and you're you. This is I'm the student, she's the teacher, I'm the child, this is my parent. And so we grow up with it our whole life, with me and you. Our imagined estrangement from the world. Studying the self in this light, Manjushri's awareness realizes the deeper, vast quality of self, liberated from all our commonly unquestioned, fabricated characteristics. I mean, I read that and I thought, you know, 20 years ago, if someone had said, well, who are you? I would have said, oh, I'm this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. But as the years go by, I keep getting less of those characteristics until today, if someone said, you know, who are you or what are you? I'd probably say, I don't know, just whatever. So I've learned a lot just by studying Manjushri, and it seems to me that a good question to ask ourselves, and I've been asking myself this, is what does wisdom mean in my daily life? What is wisdom? And what's come up for me, at least in the last 2 weeks, is what is wisdom? Don't be selfish. It's as simple as that. Don't be selfish. Wisdom is gratitude, generosity, loving kindness, compassion. You could go on and on, but it all comes down to selfishness. Are we looking at things through, am I looking at things through my eyes? And I can't do anything else. You know, I've only got the one pair of eyes, and they've come in very handy. They're getting a little blurry these days, but they still come in handy. So what is wisdom for me in my daily life? And I think what has come up for me is that if I'm going to have wisdom be key in my daily life, then I need to regularly, without fail, examine my own actions and my own mind. And so that takes me back to meditation and precepts. Meditation, sitting on my seiza bench, allows me to be still, and it allows me to look outside. Meditation, when I leave my room, come into the ceremony hall, come into the bursar's office where I help Reverend Vera, meditation means I can listen and be still with other people. I can actually hear, even though my hearing's a little compromised too, but I can actually hear what other people are saying. I can look at the world around me without judgment. And as sad and sorrowful as it is to look at the world around us these days, it actually allows me to realize that there but for the grace of God go I. I could be making those decisions to harm other people. I could be in a place where I'm being harmed. And I don't have to judge what's happening except to say, in the case of the violence that's going on, I don't want to do that. And I don't want to even have a semblance of that in my daily life. I don't want to be so removed from my connection with other people that I could do what's being done in this world. And so, what can I do here in the little corner of the world that I'm in? So, the things I ask myself, if compassion and love dissolve into wisdom, what does wisdom look like in my daily life? What does wisdom look like in your daily life? I think that the key question, isn't it, for all of us, is what does wisdom look like for each of us every day? Because it's not going to be the same. It's not going to be the same for me today as it is tomorrow. And going back to don't be selfish, which has become a really key reminder for me, when I think about wisdom and I think about not being selfish, what comes up for me is kindness, simply being kind. Patience, not wanting everything to happen when I think it should, just being patient. Acceptance, looking within and letting go. And I was reminded of another quote by Take on Dan Layton in this regard that I liked a lot. Excuse me, in looking within. Insight involves going within, seeing the fundamental. This energy exemplified by Manjushri is about pulling wisdom out of the depths of oneself, about being an open channel for the awakening of Buddhahood to express itself. And I really related to his next sentence. Manjushri's wisdom arises not from external knowledge or accomplishment, but out of concentrated inner vision. Manjushri's wisdom is not acquired, but an inalienable endowment always available to us, awaiting our settling into and uncovering of this deepest awareness. So that takes us back to our meditation, to being still. Observing Manjushri's insight into emptiness, one can recognize a wider perspective into the ephemeral non-reality of our cherished views and objectives. Of course, I know none of you cherish your own opinions and preferences, but I certainly do still after 30 years. And he continues, developing such non-attachment can be a great relief from the pressures of the world of striving and desire. Manjushri's wisdom is not just another thing, some new toy with which to play. Rather, it is a tool for seeing through our unexamined ignorance. So, wisdom is going to dissolve our ignorance. And when we look at the posters and the statues of Manjushri, we see this with a sword in one hand. We think, oh, okay. And either a book or a lotus blossom that holds a book. Well, the sword is the sword of wisdom. It's the sword of cutting through delusion and cutting through ignorance. And I particularly like this little white statue that's behind me, because if you look at it closely, he's not holding the sword upright, as many statues do. He's holding the sword kind of pointed towards his own head, and he's kind of nodding. And I thought, yeah, you know, it's the sword of wisdom. It's going to cut through ignorance and delusion. It's not going to cut through your ignorance and delusion. It's going to cut through my ignorance and delusion. And that's the sword that we hold in our hand every day with the precepts, the Four Noble Truths, and the Eightfold Path. So we've got what we need. You don't have to go out, you know, and buy a sword. You've got what you need. You just need to point it towards yourself. If you point it towards your head and your head says, oh, Well, maybe that judgment isn't a good one. Maybe I don't need to judge that person or that situation. Maybe what I need to do is to offer merit. If that person or that situation is causing harm, then I can offer merit that their ignorance will dissolve into wisdom and that harm will stop. So that I can offer merit. I can stop criticizing. And I often think, hey, I've got a right to criticize. I was in journalism, I was in nursing, I did this and that. You know, you had to judge things and you had to criticize. And it wasn't on the postulant application that you had to give that up when you came, but I kind of wish that it had been. But I'm still working on it. Letting go of my preferences and opinions and seeing clearly. Let me see if I've already read this to you. There's a nice comment that Take on Dan Layton makes on observing and seeing clearly. Yes, I already read that to you, but I'll just say, observing Manjushri's insight into emptiness, one can recognize a wider perspective into the ephemeral non-reality of our cherished views and objectives. So when we recognize that, yes, I've held these opinions and preferences for years and years, and I can let them go. And I think the other things that came up for me in looking at wisdom was generosity and gratitude, because those are the key factors for me that have helped me let go of my judging and my criticizing. They've helped me see clearly if I want to be generous and I want to express my gratitude, is this the way to do it? And the other thing, the other one that came up for me in thinking about wisdom and not being selfish was forgiveness. Forgiveness was not something I grew up with. And I'm grateful to the Dalai Lama for having talked so much about forgiveness. Reverend Master Ji certainly talked about it. Forgiveness, I think, is recognizing the humanity of the people around us and that they're not perfect any more than I am perfect. And it's okay for all of us to not be perfect. I often go back to Shinru Suzuki's comment in a book may have been called something like To Shine One Corner of the World, but anyway, it's little excerpts from meditation talks that he did. And he said, and now just remember that all of you are perfect. All of us are perfect. And he ended by saying, and some of you could use a little improvement. So I thought of that a lot. I thought, I don't have to be perfect. So I like reminders. I think it's more than just aging when I don't remember something. I think I've always needed reminders. This is what Thich Nhat Hanh had to say in that article that I quoted to you. And this has to do with reminders. The practice of a bodhisattva is not to talk a lot, but to act. We make the effort to bring joy to one person in the morning and to help relieve the suffering of one person in the afternoon. When you are just beginning to be a bodhisattva, you can do this. When you are a bigger bodhisattva, you can bring joy to many people and help relieve the suffering of many others. Every word, it's very important. Every word, every look, every act, and every smile can bring happiness to others. I could relate to you, and I have in previous Dharma talks, so many instances where I just smiled at someone, and I'm not talking about people I know, or I said, thank you, and they would turn around and say, oh, you're welcome, or they'd smile back, and they never intended to do either one of those things. When you know how to walk mindfully with happiness, kindness, and humility, you are already bringing joy to many people. Practicing diligently, we become a source of peace and joy to those we love and all living things. The joy of others is our own joy. This is the wisdom of interbeing, the all acceptance of letting go and recognizing the oneness of all beings. One of the things that I have found helpful as reminders is from a book called Zen Happiness. It's by John Muth. I think that's the pronunciation. M-U-T-H. I first came across his artwork in a book called Poems to Learn by Heart by Carolyn Kennedy. And if you have a chance to come across that, it's really a treasure. And I thought, oh, and then I found that he had both authored and illustrated some Zen books. So, and of course, I'm very fond of pandas, so I really liked this book. And when I got it, I found out that it just has an illustration on one page and a saying, a Zen saying on the other page. So I have this on a bookcase where I see every day. I put rubber bands around here so it'll stay like that, and I get to see both the illustration and his quote. I'm going to read you some of the quotes. I think they're wonderful reminders. Be kind to yourself, and whatever you do today, let it be enough. Be kind to yourself. Whatever you do today, let it be enough. One of my favorites. Be someone you want to be around. I thought, oh, well, I have to look into that. Be someone you want to be around. So when I get crabby, because, you know, I have chronic insomnia. When I get crabby, I think, I don't have to be crabby. I don't have to be crabby. I can be sleepless, but I don't have to be crabby. Be someone you want to be around. Another one. What we do now is what matters most. What we do now is what matters most. Some time back, I came across, because I'm also a great procrastinator. I've had a lot of experience. They didn't ask me about that on my postulancy application either. And I'm still doing it. But anyway, when I know that there's something I need to do, and I'm putting it off. This is what I learned. If not now, when? If not here, where? And if not me, who? That's the one that always gets me. If not me, who? Another one, with our thoughts, we create the world. And when I kind of puzzled over that a little bit. With our thoughts, we create the world. And then I realized that when I'm judgmental and criticizing, then the world around me changes. When I can be kind and experience joy and forgiveness and kindness, that's what the world becomes. So it's made a lot of difference to me. So those are some reminders that I'm grateful to John Muth for. I encourage you to look at what would be good reminders for you of how you want to practice wisdom the day you get up and throughout the day. And at night, that you look at what you have to be grateful for. Because I think gratitude and generosity are such a big part of wisdom. Allowing ourselves to dissolve into wisdom can only be done by complete letting go of self. And when I was thinking about letting go of self, I was a pretty good cook before I came here. My mom was of the generation where, you know, women stayed at home and cooked and did the laundry, but she also worked outside to earn some money. So I learned a lot about cooking. And I thought back to the fascination I had when you had to dissolve something. You know, if you have a lump of something, or if you have some powder and you can see what it is, and you put it into this liquid, and then you start stirring, and you stir, and you stir, and you stir, and the next thing you know, it's gone. It's become one. I didn't think of it that way. It's become one with whatever it is you stirred it into. So that when we practice gratitude and generosity and compassion and love and kindness, what they dissolve into is wisdom. It's just we can't see it, but it's there. It's right inside of us. So I would encourage you to think about how you can allow wisdom to dissolve into yourself, and how you can dissolve yourself by letting go into wisdom. Thank you all for coming. May you have a good day. If we're lucky, we'll see the eclipse tomorrow, right? Hopefully. And let's say the three homages together. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha.